maybe I should preach in Creole, and then I want us to go directly in the scripture this evening. We'll be in Ephesians chapter 4. We'll start with the scripture, set up the context for our lesson this evening. Ephesians chapter 4, and I'll be reading verse 29. Ephesians 4, verse 29, Paul says this: "Let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word as is good for edification, according to the need of the moment, so that it will give grace to those who hear." Over the last few weeks, I've had several people tell me how nervous they are in the upcoming Thanksgiving, because there are issues going on in their personal lives, issues going on in their families that has been dragged on for years, but they've never addressed it. And many of them express this sense of anxiety of going there because they're not sure, first of all, how they'll be received, what kind of drama they're going to have, who's going to say what, who's going to throw what turkey leg at whom. And it's interesting, it shows the not just the inability, but the fear of learning how to communicate with one another, especially when we've got stuff that we've got to iron out. So I thought it would be a good time this evening to do a very simple lesson on effective communication. Now, we understand every single person that lives and breathes and moves about communicates. But not everybody knows how to communicate effectively. Very interesting in this passage here, Paul says, "Let no unwholesome word comes out of your mouth, but actually whenever you speak, whenever you interact, do things that builds people up." And you realize oftentimes the anxiety that we have is because the nature of our interaction crushes our spirit. It pulls us down. It makes us feel not just uneasy, but hurt. Would you want to always talk, interact, be in an environment where you're always being picked at, criticized, put down? Of course not. So naturally, our posture is we pull back. We avoid. We don't say anything. But even in not speaking words, your body speaks very loudly. And how do we negotiate all that? How do we actually deal with this sense of tension, uncomfortableness, and learn to really let our loved ones know how much we care? What does it mean to communicate? The simple definition. What is it? What communication is all about? It's simply this: an interaction between two people. It's always a two-way street, if you will. We're exchanging specific messages, and you always have one person speaking. Hopefully the other person is listening. And then we change role. The other person speaks, the other one listens. Now, what makes communication effective is the ability for us to do this back and forth in a way that is not just respectful, but where we understand what is being said. In James chapter 1, I want you to turn there. There's a beautiful model of interaction that James gives us that I think is very important that we learn from and implement in our own lives. In James chapter 1, let me read verse 19. Listen to what James says. He says, "This you know, my beloved brethren, but everyone must be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger." Now, we're going to come to this later on and flesh it out. But he's basically saying here, whenever somebody's speaking, be quick to not speak, but to listen. Now, all the husbands here will know exactly what I'm going to say here. Whenever my wife calls me, if I detect in her tone that it's not going to be good, guess what I'm doing? I'm putting my MO ready. Because the minute she stops, I'm just going to fire away. Naturally, when we detect that it's not going to go well, we feel threatened, or we feel that somehow there's going to be some kind of criticism, we prepare ourselves to protect ourselves and tell her how wrong she is, instead of being quick to just pay attention. What is it that she's trying to convey? What is it that she's trying to let me understand? Even when she's upset, what is it she wants me to try to change in order so that our relationship can grow closer. Did you realize that great communication allows us to come closer to one another? It's kind of like this. One person I was talking to 3 weeks ago, he says, well, give me an example, an illustration of what good communication is. I say, it's kind of like dancing. I know sometimes in church we hate talking about dancing because, you know. But to me, it's kind of like dancing. It's like you open your hands, you invite the person. We're going to go somewhere. I'm not sure where. We may step on each other's toes for a little bit. But we're going to try to do these things together. And the more you do it together, the easier it gets and the closer you are, the more intimate you are. But for many people, communication is simply this. It's a wrestling match. Somebody has to win. Can you imagine the energy that it takes to always fight, to always win, and somebody has to lose? Unfortunately, in many our homes, in many of relationships, it's just a wrestling match over and over again. That's not good communication at all. That actually does not accomplish much at all. In Proverbs 18, let's turn there real quick. Listen to what the wise man says there. Proverbs 18, verses 2, Solomon says this. Well, actually, let me even start in verse 1. He says, he who separates himself seeks his own desire. He quarrels against all sound wisdom. A fool does not delight in understanding, but only in revealing his own mind. He's basically saying here, one-way relationship, one-way communication does not work. There will always be collision. If somebody always wants to just reveal what's in his mind and refuses to listen to somebody else, it's not going to go well at all. It doesn't help in communicating effectively. It's good that we pay attention to this. Good communication involves verbal talking, but also our body language, right? So, for instance, if your parents ask you, one of the teenagers here, go get rid of the trash or clean your room, and say, yeah, I'll do it. But then you never look at her. You're on your video game. You're eating your popcorn. You're watching your sport. Or you're sleeping. You could care less about what she's saying. Guess what she listens to? Not what you say, I'm going, but what your body says, I don't care. And then when she reacts to this, you're like, what? What's the matter? Why are you mad? Did I not say I'm going? But everything else says, not really. I don't care about trash. I don't care about you. I just care about what I'm doing right now. So our body actually speaks much louder than our words. Some researchers have said our words only contain 7% of communication. The intonation, the inflection in our voices, consists of 38% of how the person's going to respond. For instance, if you ask me, Jimmy, how are you doing? I said, well, doing fine. And if somebody else asks me, it's like, I'm all right. Whoa. I said, I'm all right, right? But what do you listen to? The tone says he's not all right. Something is going on here. So you completely dismiss the words. And then 55% of our body language is what we really listen to. So if I'm saying I'm all right, I'm walking away, I'm staring over there, and you're like, wow, I feel really put out, dismissed. I feel devalued by him. And the more that you get that vibe, the lesser you'll be willing to interact. Did you realize how oftentimes when we are talking, interacting, engaging in a relationship, we're always trying to sense of how safe it is. Is it safe now? For instance, if a visitor walks into your building for the first time, this is what he or she does for the first 15 seconds. They're scoping around to see who's going to look at them, who's going to notice them walking in. And I bet you, if this congregation, let's say, have 300 people, they feel like nobody stop and acknowledge them, you will never see them again. First 15 seconds. Who noticed me here? Is there a home here for me? Is it safe for me here? Do I belong here? And the vibe that they get will tell them much more than the words. But of course, we get up here to do our announcement. It is so wonderful to have all our visitors here. And they go like, yeah, you're right. Scratch that one off my list. But we feel that, right? We're trying to sense this stuff. In 1 Peter chapter 3, very interesting what Peter says here to the wives. If we read verses 1 through 4, in 1 Peter 3, he talks exactly about this. The power of our body language, more perhaps than our words. In 1 Peter 3, and I begin in verse 1. Peter says here, in the same way, you wives, be submissive to your own husbands, so that even if any of them are disobedient to the word, they may be won over without a word, but by the behavior of their wives. As they observe your chaste and respectful behavior, your adornment must not only be merely external, braiding the hair and wearing gold jewelry or putting on dresses, but let it be the hidden person of the heart, with the imperishable quality of a gentle, quiet spirit, which is precious in the sight of God. Go down to verse 7 and listen to what he says to the men. Same thing. You husbands, in the same way, live. He doesn't say speak to her. Live with her. Live with your wives in an understanding way, as someone weaker, since she's a woman, and show her, not tell her, but show her honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life, so that your prayers will not be hindered. Kind of reminds me of that verse in Proverbs where it says, iron sharpens iron. So therefore, that's how we should interact with one another. We need to learn to understand each other. And to understand this, we have to be quick to listen, so we can understand the meaning of the words, meaning of the expression that the person has. Now, how open are you in your communication? How excited are you to really engage in the spirit of learning and growing close to someone? Remember in Acts 17, let's actually turn there real quick. In Acts 17, we learn about a group of Christians who had that sense of openness. They were always willing to learn new things, be challenged by truth, challenge themselves to see whether they had things to learn and to grow in. I love the spirit there in Acts 17. And it says in verse 10, talking about the Christians in Berea, it says, the brethren immediately sent Paul and Silas away by night to Berea. And when they arrived, they went into the synagogue of the Jews. Now, these were more noble-minded than those in Thessalonica, for they received the word with great eagerness, examining the scriptures daily to see whether these things were so. Now, in Thessalonica, the Jews were stoning Paul, beating him up. Their minds were closed. Their minds were made up. They didn't care what he had to offer, whether truth or not, whether good or bad. They didn't care. It's hard to try to talk to someone whose mind is completely closed, whose heart actually is so haughty, arrogant, thinking that they know it all. And so this is going to be telling you rather than you sharing with them. But here, those brethren were always open. Open to learn, open to listen. But they were examining things. They were paying attention because they wanted to know whether there was still room for them to be better as individuals. In Genesis chapter 11, let's turn there, please, in verses 1 through 9. Genesis chapter 11, verses 1 through 9. I would basically just paraphrase here what's going on. But let's pay attention to a couple verses first. Verse 1. Now the whole earth used the same language and the same words. If I go back to what I said earlier, if I decide to start speaking Creole and nobody listens Creole, after a while, probably most people would just decide to go and leave. Because you're not being edified. You don't understand what's going on. It doesn't serve anybody to speak a language that you don't understand. But here it says the whole earth spoke the same language. Now the question is, what benefit did that give to them? Verse 2 says it. It says, it came about as they journeyed east, they found a plain of Shinar. And they said, come, verse 3, let's make bricks and burn them. and make stone, and let us build a city for ourselves. Let us make a name for ourselves. What would cause them to be able to do this great project? What would allow them, in a sense, to build the city to the sky, to the gods up in the heavens? This is what God says about it when he noticed it. In verse 7, God says this. Verse 6. The Lord said, behold, they are one people. They are one people. When they say spade, everybody understands spades. When they say nail, everybody understands nail. When they say good morning, everybody understands it. He puts them all on the same page. They are one people. And God continues to say, he says, and they all have the same language, and this is what they began to do. And now nothing which they purpose to do will be impossible for them. Can you imagine if I tell my wife, we want to make the name Petrus great as Christians? So if the two of us, we decide to be on the same page, we speak the same language, we understand the meaning of our languages, can you understand that nothing would be impossible for us as a couple? No persecution, no barrier, no angels, no powers will be able to overcome you when you won, God says here. That's the ability to interact, to communicate with one another, allows you to be so strong in your relationship. Nothing will be impossible for them, God says. And therefore, God decided he's going to go down and confuse their language. You know why? Because the intention of their project was selfish, self-serving. It was not God-focused. That's why God disrupted it. But can you imagine if the Christians here in Valrico decides to say this? As a homogenous group, as a unified group, we are going to take over this city. We don't care how many Baptist churches there are. We don't care how many gay pride there are. We don't care how many rebellion people there are. We don't care how many atheists there are. We're going to take over this city. We're going to turn this city upside down through the power of the God's gospel. Can you imagine if the 300 people here decide to be on the same page, how nothing would be impossible for us? You guys, you're looking for 500 acres of land to keep building. That is the power of having the ability to be on the same page, to communicate, to understand each other, and to do things that glorifies him. But do you want that kind of communication, or is it too vulnerable? See, it's interesting. When you interact with someone, you don't just take from them. You have to open up so they can take from you as well. But some people say, no, no, no. When it comes to me, door is locked. The curtains are shut. The blinds are folded. There is no way you're going to learn from me. So it's impossible, in a sense, for us to really grow closer to one another if you don't have that sense of vulnerability, openness, the humility, really, to exchange. It scares us, actually. If I'm going to open my life up to a Christian that I want to come close to, the question that I ask is this: what will he or she do with what I give? Because there are some areas in my life that nobody is privy to. You know why I'm scared to let you know? Because I don't know what's going to happen once he's out. Do you realize there are Christians in the church sitting right now that are struggling whether they should come forward after every single invitation? They're trying to decide, if I come and confess the sins that I know I can't accept, would I still be looked at the same way? Would I be treated the same way? I don't care what that struggle is. If it's pornography, if it's you're stealing, if it's you're plagiarizing, if it's you're beating somebody up, if you're drinking. We always worry about how safe it is, even in God's church. But the only way to create this safety is for every single Christian to decide that I'm going to open up. I'm going to make it safe. Because once we're united, nothing will be impossible for us. Does that make sense? And that's exactly what the lesson we learn in Genesis 11. Now, but sometimes we have to admit there are tensions that are built. There are difficulties among family members and parents and kids and brothers and sisters. I'm going to quickly give two main reasons why and two main ways we can deal with some of those tensions that we have between our relationships. First, I think the wrong that I feel from a brother or sister is a perceived wrong. It doesn't necessarily mean it's a real wrong that they've caused me. It's just a perception that I have. And if I don't speak it out, the issue will never be resolved. Let's turn to 1 Samuel 18 real quick. Just to give you an example of what I mean by a perceived wrong rather than a real sense of wrong that's been caused to me. In 1 Samuel 18, everybody knows the story, all right? In chapter 17, David had conquered, destroyed Goliath. He's the Philistine hero, right, who's been intimidating all of Israel. Even the king of Israel was cowering, afraid of this big giant there, the Philistine giant. None of the men dared challenge him. And so you have David, this scrawny little dude, this cute little boy. All of a sudden, he comes into the battlefield, wondering what is wrong with everybody here. What's wrong with all those grown men? And his brother came here. What are you doing, you petulant little insolent idiot? Don't you know that it's not safe for you to be here? He's like, what? What did I say? What did I do? I'm just asking a question. What are you guys afraid of? Somebody pulled him aside and he's like, do you see this big bad dude over there? He says, what? That uncircumcised man, he's scaring all of us? You mean this man, this little gnat before my God, he's scaring us? He says, if nobody is willing to take the challenge, I will take it. And Saul pulls him aside, very dignified. Hey, okay, we can't allow you to do this, but if you insist, I'm going to give you my shield. I will give you my sword. I will give you all my stuff, trying to be as safe as possible. You know what David says? I'm not you. You know what I'm comfortable in? In my own skin. You know what I'm used to? Just my sling and my little stones. He says, actually, the reason I'm not scared of this guy, I've been killing lions. I've been killing bears with my bare hands. Because my God does that kind of stuff. All right. David goes into this field, and he has five. I don't know how many stones he's got. I forgot how many. If he mentions how many. He's like, at least try help me break a sweat, right? He pulls just one. Like a little practice shot. The guy's gone. So now all Israel is celebrating. All Israel is in jubilance, if you will, of this victory. So the women started singing this song. Saul has killed his thousands, and David has killed his 10,000s. Oh, boy. Listen to his reaction. Listen to Saul's reaction. Let me read this again in verse 7. The women sang as they played and said, Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000s. Then Saul became very angry, for this saying displeased him. And he said, they have ascribed to David 10,000, but to me they have ascribed thousands. Now what more can he want but the kingdom? Saul looked at David with suspicions from that day on. You know, sometimes our own insecurity will cause us to perceive every kind of wrong around us. You know, sometimes our own sense of inadequacy will make us look at brothers and sisters who are so real and authentic, genuine, will make us look at them with suspicions and bitterness and resentment. You know why? Because they represent what we thought we need to be and we can't. From that day on, he was on this quest to destroy David. Which reminds me, isn't that the same thing that Cain did, right? God says, come offer your offerings. So Abel offered his offerings with all sincerity. He gave the very best, and he just throws in whatever he throws in there. And then he's mad at his brother for just being who he is. Now, guess what Cain needed to do, and guess what Saul needed to do? They needed to talk it out. They needed to be vulnerable for a change. So you know what, David? There's something about you, dude. Even if you're a little shepherd boy, I'm this big king that I envy. How can I be like you? That's what he needed to say. But the pride oftentimes prevents us from doing this. You know why some people will forego going to their Thanksgiving dinner this year and next year and the next 10 years? Because they don't have the humility to tell their brother, their sister, their aunt, their mom, their daughter, their sons, there's something about you that I've always wanted to be. And it makes me resentful of you because of it. It makes me jealous of you because of it. I'm inspired because of it. Instead of just talking it out, sharing it. Be vulnerable in it so we can grow closer to one another. We need to learn to give the benefit of the doubt sometimes. It's very important instead of just jumping to conclusion. Let's turn to Ecclesiastes 7 real quick. Listen to what Solomon says here. I think it's good as we learn to learn how to communicate, we need to give the benefit of the doubt sometimes. Ecclesiastes Chapter 7. Let me see what verse I'm wanting here. Verse 19. It's the verse I want. Chapter 7, verse 19. Listen to what Solomon says here. He says, wisdom strengthens a wise man more than 10 rulers who are in the city. Indeed, there is not a righteous man on earth who continually does good and who never sins. He says, we all have our time where we mess up. So cut some people some slack. We don't have to nitpick every time. He says in verse 21, also, do not take seriously all the words which are spoken so that you will not hear your servant cursing. For you also have realized that you likewise have many times cursed others. I've had people who maybe have just said something innocently. That they've taken it as a slight. Oh, man, they run with this as if it's gospel. Oh, they're mad. How dare this guy, this preacher, say something like this and hurt my feelings. Now, if you were to be honest, how many times have you walked out of this building, you got into your car, and you look at your husband, you look at your wife, you say, did you see him? Did you hear that? If it were to be true, we've talked about people. We've said stuff that's not really nice. So why do we explode when we perceive that somebody has done this to us? Cut them some slack. It's not all that bad. It's not that bad. It's also good to find out what the motivation is whenever we perceive that somebody has done something wrong. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, I love the scripture here in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. Instead of putting everybody in the same bag, instead of throwing the baby in the bathwater in the bathtub together, Paul says here in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, find out exactly where each individual is at. Measure them on their own merits. Verse 14 says, we urge you, brethren, admonish the unruly, encourage the faint-hearted, help the weak, be patient with everyone. So in a sense, don't assume that everybody is the same. Let's wind down here. Sometimes, though, you will have people who intentionally will hurt you. It's not just a perception. Intentionally, they will be malicious. Intentionally, they will try and do things to hurt you, to get at you. So how do you react to this? You know what I've had people do, I've seen people do many times, especially in congregations? They will not address the issue. They will just pick up and leave and go attend somewhere else. But what does that solve? To me, honestly, perhaps you feel uncomfortable to still worship here. You feel so hurt by somebody you're so close to. Resolve the issue before you leave. Because if we just pick up and go, somebody is wrong somewhere. Who is it? And the only way to know this is to address the issue head on. Listen to what Jesus says in Matthew chapter 5. Listen to what Christ says here in Matthew 5. And we slowly draw a conclusion here. In Matthew 5, Jesus says, beginning verse 21, he says, "You have heard that the ancient were told, you shall not commit adultery, and whoever commits adultery shall be liable to the court. But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother shall be guilty before the court. And whoever says to his brother, 'You good for nothing,' shall be guilty before the Supreme Court. And whoever says, 'You fool,' shall be guilty enough to go into the fiery hell." Verse 23. "Therefore, if you are presenting your offerings at the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your offering there before the altar and go first be reconciled to your brother and then come and present your offerings." Can you imagine? He says, it's Sunday morning, you're coming to church and you realize right there in the parking lot that you got this burning issue in your heart towards this brother or sister, towards your mom, your dad, towards your son or your daughter, towards your husband or your wife. He says, you know what? Decide that morning to not go to church and worship. Turn around, go home, go somewhere, and address the issue before you come worship. In 2 weeks for Thanksgiving, you know what I'm saying? Before we all pretend that we are such a wonderful, beautiful, happy family, during the time that we're preparing the turkey, during the time we're running the errands, ride with that person. Sit at the end of that bench with that person and iron out our issue before we get to that table and really be the happy-go-lucky family. Don't wait till it's the last 5 seconds before we bless the food to just walk in and say you had tire problems. Take the opportunity, actually, before we offer our offerings of thanksgiving to address the specific issues going on. In Matthew 18, it's exactly what the Lord says, right? To all of us, in Matthew 18, in verse 15, he says, "If your brother sins," verse 15, "go and show him his fault in private. If he listens to you, you have won your brother. But if he does not listen to you, take one or two with you so that by the mouth of two or three witnesses, every fact can be confirmed. If he refuses to listen to them, tell it to the church. And if he refuses to listen even to the church, let him be to you as a Gentile and a tax collector." Now, the last verse I want to look at is Proverbs 27. Proverbs 27. Verses 5 and 6. Something else I've noticed is sometimes we do want to speak the truth. We do want to express our feelings, but we're more afraid of hurting somebody else's feelings. So to keep the peace, we just eat it all up inside. But it doesn't help anybody, does it? And here Solomon says this in Proverbs 27, verse 5 and 6. He says, "Better is open rebuke than love that is concealed. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but deceitful are the kisses of an enemy." Talk it out, he says. Yeah, it may hurt for now, but it will heal us on the long run. I'm going to extend a little invitation briefly. Perhaps the wheel is just rolling in your head right now. You're probably going, uh-oh. Because you're aware, perhaps there are issues that you have to kind of deal with. There's a sense of communication that you need to interact with, and you're not sure how to address it. Perhaps you're overwhelmed. Perhaps you're afraid. Perhaps you're unsure. God is basically reassuring us tonight in this lesson, it's okay. It's okay. Just speak your truth. Speak it in love. Speak it with kindness. Speak it with sincerity. If you hurt, just tell them you hurt. If you're mad, just tell them you're mad. If you feel like unseen, dismissed, just let them know how you feel. If you're happy, well, tell them you're happy. Just speak truth. To go around all the time faking the smiles, acting like all is good, you know what it does? It creates a lot of stress unnecessarily. And a lot of people have ulcers because of it, honestly. They get sick physically because we're not made to walk around with all stress all the time. Let's talk it out. Perhaps there are non-Christians here this evening, visitors, afraid to come and confess your sins because you're worried, will I be looked at the same ever again? You know what God says? He knows what's going on already. And when you confess, he's just going to clean it all up. You are good in his book. And that should be okay with everybody else. If it's not, it's their problem. It's not yours. So come. His arms is wide open. He says, come to me. I will give you a yoke that's much easier, much lighter than the one you're carrying right now. I will offer you a lifestyle that is less stress than the one you are living in with right now. I will give you a sense of clarity that you've never experienced before. I will empower you to live authentically, more than you ever thought possible. Are there issues among us Christians that we need to iron out? Come forward. It's okay. Let's talk our truth. Whatever our needs are, let's please stand and sing as encouragement.